Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted.
And good evening, everyone. Welcome to another Tuesday night installment here at Your Remedies in the Law. Tonight, of course, we're discussing various IRS administrative remedies with our speaker, Mr. Tony Davis. My name is Mark Michaels. I'll be your host for this evening's conference brought to you by Your Remedies in the Law, which is in direct affiliation with Americans Restoring America. Before we get started with this evening, though, it is very important that I provide you with the following disclaimer.
Nothing that you hear on this call tonight may be deemed by you in any way, shape, or form to be legal advice. If you are on this call because of a situation in your life where you require legal advice, I very politely ask you to hang up the phone. Now, we don't mean to sound rude when we say this. We just want to express to everyone in no uncertain terms that anyone joining this call looking for legal advice has no place or business here. Nobody here at Your Remedies in the Law or any of the programs offered by Americans Restoring America is a lawyer, attorney, or any member of the bar. Therefore, no one here is able to offer you any legal advice. Should you require legal advice, my advice to you would be get an attorney. As for these calls, they're all just for entertainment purposes. It's just folks saying what they might do where they're similarly situated to you. You might get a little bit of education out of it, but mainly you're just going to get folks' opinions about what they might do. However educated and experienced these thoughts and opinions might be, they are just people's opinions nonetheless, and it's always up to you to do your own due diligence. All right, on to the next subject. I'd like to go over a few things here with Your Remedies in the Law, if I could, very quickly. First of all, if I can take everybody to the homepage of www.yourremediesinthelaw.com, if we look up in the upper right-hand corner, we see a little picture of the Constitution. Click on that, and you'll have a separate page come up with just two items on it. These two items are of much importance, though, especially if this is all new to you. First and most importantly on the left is the jurisdictionary course. This is your 24-hour crash course on the rules of civil procedure. Better known to some as American jurisprudence or AMJUR, the rules of civil procedure are essentially the foundation or structure upon which all law in America rests. So to have a firm and thorough understanding of these rules means to have at least a basic understanding of what's going on in virtually any court scenario that you find yourself in. On the right is the common law default process, mostly known for its high national win rate in most traffic cases throughout the country. At least that's what it's most popularly acquired for. But that is not really why it's on this page. The reason that we have it up here with the jurisdictionary course is when you go through it, you'll notice that it utilizes a lot of the same fundamental procedures that you learned about in the jurisdictionary course, so it kind of acts as a real-life homework assignment. Also, for a lot of folks, it's their first time committing to action. Folks seem a little more willing to take that first step, probably because of such a high success rate and traffic scenarios being such a common interest in this country today. The common law default, although known majorly for traffic purposes, has many other. Truly, it's for most scenarios that you may find yourself in where there's no damage to property or person. It's just some entity is claiming you broke a rule, therefore you must pay a civil penalty. Both of these items are very affordably priced, the jurisdictionary with a contribution of $250 and the common law default at $150. Also on the subject of Your Remedies in the Law, most of you are probably familiar now with Americans Restoring America. Every time you visit the homepage of yourremediesinthelaw.com, you are met with that blue box that pops up asking if you'd like to continue on to the site that you were visiting or stay and visit Americans Restoring America. The reason that we've done this is very simple. We're trying to get folks to explore. There are multiple information providers talking about multiple subjects, as well as many other features and study groups at Your Remedies in the Law. And Your Remedies in the Law is just one of a couple dozen websites that all together make up Americans Restoring America. So there's quite a bit for you to see, and we hope that you'll do just that at your leisure. If you have any questions about whether or not we have an information provider that could give you their personal educated opinion about your particular situation, get a hold of us at yourremediesinthelaw.com, and we'll be happy to assist you in any way that we can. Statewide communications. If you're not already a member, please do sign up. Tell your friends and family about it. That's that map of the United States that you see on virtually every site that we have. It's a private communications platform that enables folks to speak with one another on a local level based on very strict pre-decided topics of discussion. Essentially, how it works is this. A wizard will walk you through a very easy setup. You know, put your name in here, click next. Put your zip code in here, click next, that sort of thing. Then it will walk you through the remainder of the setup. And then you get to a point where it will ask you what are your hot points interested in. This could range anything from credit card issues, home foreclosure, IRS matters, asset protection, or maybe veterans' rights, maybe personal health rights, anything that you can think of. If it affects your personal rights, you should find it in that list or something that's close enough. When the setup is complete, it puts it all together, much of what you think of a social network. Though nothing like a social network. It's very custom. It's very private. But it then puts you in contact with people in your local area that have similar interests to you. The idea here is to put the power of education and communication back in the hands of the common man. If you are in need of legal advice or you need someone to represent you, you're going to have to get an attorney. It's just that simple. But if there was a way, a private place that you could go to discuss matters, your personal opinions, their personal opinions, with people that were like-minded, maybe you jump online one day and you say, this happened to me today. First person comes back and says, well, I disagree with that. I don't think that they should be able to do that. I don't think that's fair. Well, that's probably not going to be of a tremendous amount of help to you. Maybe the next person comes on and says, well, I'll tell you what I would do were I similarly situated. I'd watch these YouTube videos, and then I'd go down there to my local county courthouse, go to the law library, get a law dictionary, and look at these terms. Maybe the next person after that says, those all sound like great ideas. I'd also go to this particular website and check out these educational materials that might assist you in your learning. And then for you to go and do some due diligence on what you're reading, just people's suggestions, people's opinions at all. But if you did some due diligence and educated yourself, maybe the farther you got into it, you discovered that it's not as difficult as you initially thought it would be because you're focused on one single subject. And you get to the point where you've educated yourself, and now you're handling your own affairs, your own matters. Well, folks, there's nothing illegal or unlawful about that. And that's all we're trying to do here at Statewide Communications is just very simply get people to start talking again. Of course, there's no cost to you for using Statewide Communications, either signing up or the regular using of it. And so we hope that you'll pass that around. Freedom's Radio. If you're over the road, you don't want to deal with the call process, and you're just new to your remedies in the law, and you don't yet have your username and password, therefore you can't see the phone number and the PIN. By the way, if you'd like to pick up a membership to your remedies in the law, it's very easy. You just simply click the register button. Fill out your basic information there. You'll enjoy the first 30 days for free to evaluate it. After that, it converts to a very affordable $10 a month on your credit card or your PayPal. But every single call is recorded. You have years of archives to go through, a vast wealth of knowledge, as well as many other wonderful features. But if that's not an option for you today, you have freedomsradio.com. Every night, the calls go out over the air at 9 p.m. Eastern live. There's also the question bar there where you can type in a question, click submit. As long as that's during call hours, that will pop up on the moderator screen, and we do our best to read every single one of those questions out over the air as long as they are appropriate. So you'll get the one-on-one with the information provider like you would be by being a private member, but you do get your questions answered. There's no cost to utilize Freedom's Radio, so no matter where you are or your circumstances, you never have to miss a call again if you don't wish. All right, winding down here, I'd like to go over one last bit of housekeeping. This is your caveat emptor, or your buyer beware. For any purchase that you may make if your remedy is in the law or any of the other sites underneath the umbrella of Americans Restoring America, when you come aboard and you go with an information provider, you are doing just that. Information providers pay Mr. Edward for advertising at your remedy is in the law. This payment would be an expense to that information provider along with any other expenses that they might have associated with your particular product or service. When you contact us, all we simply do is listen to your particular scenario, quickly deduce from a list of folks that honestly most of you would probably never be able to find on your own just simply because they can't be found. Can we make those introductions? Not every part on the information provider is always going to be successful. Everybody always aim for the best. But unavoidable things do sometimes happen, and when they do, you have to roll with them and deal with them as you would with anything else in life. But we also want to emphasize, though, that the intent is always to be successful. If you have any questions of that, we welcome you to visit www.yourremedyisinthelaw.com/testimonials and see what others have to say about these products and services. Now, let's touch very quickly on the subject of refunds or the refund policy. There is none. Not if your remedy is in the law, anyway. Of course, when you call board and you go with a particular information provider, again, that is exactly what you're doing. So any discussion of a refund or a credit would be a strict and private matter between you and the information provider, and even then, that's very few and far between. It must be extenuating circumstances. You are expected to have done your due diligence before you commit to any particular process or information provider's time. All right. Lastly, pertaining here to all of the information providers at Your Remedy is in the Law, we'd like you to remind everybody that all of our speakers at these conferences are our guests and should be treated with the highest level of respect. If you disagree with something that a speaker has to say, that's fine. Disagreeing is how we learn, but please, you must always be civil. Besides, if we dispose properly and then answer properly, then we can all learn something from it. All right, that is my ramble for this evening, folks. Tonight's speaker
is Mr. Yes, thank you. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Michael Edward here. That last part that you just heard was the recording. John will be joining us shortly. And so I want to just give you a quick 30,000-foot view as to what we'll be speaking about tonight, what John will be talking about. The topic tonight is titled U.S. District Court Filings in Preparation for Litigation. John is of the opinion, and I agree with him totally, that the important part with any new student that will be going to court, even though there will be every effort to have the court recognize your Sixth Amendment right to counsel of your choice, that regardless of whether the courts follow the law or not, John wants you prepared for the litigation as much as possible. And preparation does not begin 3 or 4 weeks before your court date. Preparation began at this point, at the earliest point possible. You know, the saying goes, when's the best time to plant a shade tree? Well, that was 20 years ago. So the earliest that we can that John can initiate with you and getting you familiar with the court system, the litigation going back and forth, the sooner that happens, the better. I envision that possibly one day we will even have what they call moot courts or something like that, where we'll be doing a lot of pretending and play acting out, if you would, the different positions of being judge or being a prosecutor or being the defendant, just again to familiarize yourself that much more. So without further ado, it's my pleasure to turn this call over to Brother John.
Thank you both Martin and Michael for those kind and gracious introductions. Are you able to hear me okay?
You're a little soft, but that's all right unless you can get that microphone closer to your mouth.
Okay, is that a little better?
That's a little worse, actually.
Okay. Hold on a second. I'm going to mute out. I'm sorry. I have a cup of hot tea here for my voice. I'm trying to get my voice back. How's that? Can you hear me now?
Well, we're going to pay. You know, the great thing about someone who speaks softly is everyone strains to listen, so go right ahead.
Well, you're very gracious. Thank you. Okay. though you're not at war, the tip of the spear best be sharp. It's like having a personal protection device at home, you know, tucked under your pillow or under the bed or whatever, you know, and if you don't know how to use it, a lot of times nocturnal intruders end up taking those personal protection devices away from the victim and sometimes using it on them. You hope that your personal protection device, that the worst case scenario is that it sits in its storage spot or its safe spot where it's within arm's reach, you know, till it gets corroded or rusty or dusty, and you spend once a year or twice a year cleaning it out. But if you're not prepared and all of a sudden you hear a nocturnal intruder, that's a sinking feeling when you don't have any recourse. You're upstairs and the children's bedroom is downstairs, and there's nothing you can do to prevent them from having their way with your family. To that end, all of us end up in court sometime. For most of us, it's not a matter of if, it's just a matter of when. Whether it's a common traffic infraction or something where you're facing criminal charges, or many of the students that we're currently working with, they're working on removing themselves from the 1040 system. And to that end, we may have worked with one or two students over time, and the most impressive thing is that when a judge says something like this, "I see that you're a pro se litigant, not jury juris, but a pro se litigant." They say that, and you know, you may not understand this or that aspect of it, but the judge says, "Let me help you out. You need to consider revising this, or you need to consider filing that, or you need to consider taking this approach, or here's a landmine that you might step on, and you should do this to avoid that." And the thing is that a lot of the packages that we help our students prepare, especially for removing themselves from the 1040 system, the student goes in for a hearing for a motion for temporary injunction and permanent restraining order against the IRS, okay? And to that end, excuse me, hang on. Excuse my humble apologies. I tried to mute out so I wouldn't cough in your ears. To that end, a motion for temporary injunction and permanent restraining order. Motion for temporary injunction is an emergency motion, meaning that a lot of times it'll get heard before sometimes even the U.S. Marshals Service can get the complaint to the U.S. Attorney's Office and the IRS. And those are the two people that you'll be serving if you do that. And so at this juncture, I've realized the need, because there's a handful of students, there's some on this call that we're currently working with, that when you file for the motion for temporary injunction and permanent restraining order — by the way, there's a couple of students that are not on this call that should be on tonight. Michael, is Bill from Florida on tonight?
No, sir. Nick from Arizona is.
Okay. Can you invite Bill from Florida and
sure.
potentially Jim from Arizona to this call? This would be a good call for them.
All right.
Thank you. What happens is that when you make a motion for temporary injunction, what's happening is that the court recognizes that as an emergency procedure, emergency action to prevent harm to you. That your person, your family, your finances, whatever there is that you're temporarily enjoying. Now, in the criminal side of the court, the opposite side of the sheet of paper, there's a big line down the center, and there's civil on the right and criminal on the left. Now, on the criminal side, they have protective orders that if it's something where they can be physical, personal harm to your person, on the civil side, it's called an injunction. And what happens is that this kind of harm can come in the form of financial destabilization or et cetera, et cetera. But what happens is that you need to recognize that you need to understand that the court has to recognize a clear and present danger or a threat to you, okay? That's extremely important. What happens is that at the hearing, usually they'll schedule a hearing long before the trial is to be scheduled, long before they've got a trial scheduling order and this and that, and things that, you know, that are part of the normal process. And so what happens is that sometimes your opponent, the U.S. government, the DAG, Deputy Attorney General's Office, and or the IRS, may not be there. It's very, very important that when you have your opponent served, when you file for service on your opponent, it's wise and recommended that you have, if there is a bailiff or marshal service available at that particular court, and remember there's, you know, in the United States, there's more than one U.S. District Courts, it's very, very important that of the 94 district courts that are available in the U.S., I think there's over 40 of them that have marshals or bailiff service available in the court. And because, then this is something that's very, very important, those marshals, some of those service fees are $200 or $300, upwards of $400 to serve it, where you can go usually down the block around the corner from the courthouse. There's, along with all the bail bondsmen, there is process servers salt and peppered in amongst all the bail bonds places around a court. And so what happens is that you can go to the process servers places, and some of them for less than $40 or $60 will serve your process for you. It's extremely important to note that when a U.S. District Court judge is looking at the record, and if there's a if it's been served properly, there will be what's called a return of service. And all of the, right now we're talking about everything in preparation to get into court, okay? So what happens is that return of service is signed by the process server or the federal marshal that you paid moonlighting fees to go serve your complaint, etc., or the process, however the process server was, as a bailiff or whatever. But it'll be signed and testified to, and in certain cases, in some, like in New York, it's required to be if it's international, apostilled, or notarized if it's domestic. In many of the and actually New York and some of the New York Superior Courts, etc., in different courts around the U.S. There's a handful of them that require that it be notarized. But that'll be in the record. And if you go look into the record, and one thing that you always want to do, you want to have access to what's happening in your court proceeding. This is important. There's something called public access to court electronic records, PACER, public access to court electronic records, PACER. And you can sign up for a PACER account. It's free. You'll need to have a credit card there so that, because there are certain charges for certain downloads. The PACER, over the years, I guess for the last 30 years that I've had a PACER account, they've always allowed for, like, if you have less than 20 or 30 records or less than $10 or $20 worth of bills per month, they don't charge you. They waive it. But if you're using it a lot, there's like a 10 cents per download fee. This is cheap at 10 times the price. You can, from the comfort of your own computer at home or sitting in the parking lot at the McDonald's, you know, you can download the latest court documents, okay? And one of our students today had a hearing today, and less than 90 minutes after the hearing, the judge filed a proposed order, and the student was able to pull down the copy of it 90 minutes later. The student made application to appear telephonically, and he had a PACER account already set up in advance. From the comfort of his home, he appeared in court today and filed the documents, made the pleading, got the copy of the order, everything, soup to nuts, and didn't put on a tie. Actually, he didn't even put his shoes on. It's some of the hearings, especially the preliminary hearings, and in cases where individuals are geographically located in excess of what is semi-convenient for the to get to the court, the courts are now allowing electronic appearance. We were in a court hearing 2 weeks ago. Excuse me. A court hearing 2 weeks ago where actually the previous hearing, the judge asked opposing counsel, where are you located? And she says, oh, I'm located at this place, such and such. And the judge says, that's kind of far. And to our student, he asked, well, where are you located? And that was kind of far. So the judge says, we're going to have the next one via electronic telephonic appearance. And be prepared in advance to be able to accept that kindness and appear telephonically. Okay. Now, if you appear telephonically and it's via, the legal version of Zoom call or one of the other legal things, and please remember that Zoom, there is nothing, there is zero, 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 nothing that is secure about Zoom. You know, and they say you can't record or no screenshots or no photos or this or that, you know. The Chinese record everything. And I had somebody that a couple of weeks ago, he dropped by the little airport where I live and invited me up to the terminal there, and we sat on the G4 that he was in, and we were chatting, and he says, you know, we've got a problem with something here, and we sat down, and he logged on, and he logged on to a Chinese website, and he speaks fluent Mandarin and reads and writes fluent Mandarin, and pulled down 4 copies of separate Zoom calls that I was on. And just cavalier, you know, just off the cuff, just without, you know, without any ado, just not even saying, hey, watch this, I'm going to impress you. He didn't say anything. This, it was just so off the cuff. He just, like, it was part of daily life. And he pulled up copies of 4 Zoom calls that I was on. And he, you know, played back their recordings, you know. And so a lot of these courts, you know, when the clerk advises that, you know, it's a felony to record, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Just FYI. But, you know, there's nothing secure about that. The by the way, if you're interested in a new type of meeting where you must appear with a visage or an image, let Michael know. We prefer not to use any of those. I've been asked not to, maybe because somewhere where I used to work in a previous life. But there's another system that you can use that is so much better, and they don't record anything. But okay, when you appear via Zoom, appear in courtroom attire. If you're appearing and you're a lady, dress casual with a collar. Very, very important. No low-cut blouses, none of that stuff. You know, and definitely not a T-shirt. But and if you're a man, a definite with if you can appear with a suit jacket and a tie, absolutely. Absolutely with a collared shirt. I do not recommend polo shirts. A collared button-up with a tie, very, very important. You're technically in a courtroom, and although they're just getting this talking head shot of you, you're technically in the courtroom, and when you dress professionally, the respect and positive feedback that's engendered. I've had so many gowns and gavels talk about, with callous disdain, about individuals that appeared in a polo shirt or, you know, just kind of didn't brush their hair or something, you know. But they are impressed, when, especially when sui juris litigants, or in this, you know, much to the disdain of the legal profession, pro se litigants appear very professionally. The respect that that engenders is off the Richter scale. Absolutely. You know what they say, you get one chance to make a first impression, you know, and when, however your court case is going to go, the first time that you appear makes, sets the pace for the way they're going to treat you. Absolutely, absolutely, absolutely dress up, you know. And of those 94 district courts and 13 circuit courts that are in the United States, please, please, please impress everybody, especially the judge. They and one thing that's extremely important is that not just your presentation, curb appeal, but your manner is very, very important. You know, when the judge speaks, yes, Your Honor, thank you, Your Honor. Treat the justice with their utmost of dignity and respect. Even if the justice is a low-down, slimy, scum-sucking, bottom-feeding piece of swamp moss, I mean a less-than-honorable judge. Did he say that out loud? You know, the position, the gown, and the gavel endear and are worthy of the respect. the fact that somebody either elected that official, that individual, or appointed them, however you want to slice it out, nobody has any authority on this sorry, miserable third rock from the sun that we call planet Earth and home, unless the that intelligent designer on high approves it. And that includes these sometimes less than honorable, sometimes very honorable servants of the Most High King. But even the less than honorable ones, if you treat them with dignity and respect, people have a nasty habit of living up to your expectations. If you, it's simply put, you know, if you come home and your children are, well, watching TV and you low down, good for nothing son or daughter of mine, you know, you should be working, you're never going to mount that, you know, just keep saying that. They'll live up to your expectations. But if you, conversely, if you come in and, hey, guys, you've been working hard and you're taking a short break before you get back to your studies. Hey, is there anything I can do to be an asset or blessing for you? Enjoy your respite. There's multiple ways you can handle everything. Excuse me. No matter how you slice it, the respect that you give the judge, you can take the most poorest, unworthy individual that is only worthy of the respect because of the position, and raise the bar, and it's strange. Basic premises of human psychology is they have a nasty habit of living up to your expectations, and you treat them with dignity and respect, in spite of however they may treat you. You may be shocked. People are like empty glass, or like glasses, you know, that have water. Some of those glasses are empty, and if they don't have any water, you can pour a little in their glass, and then they've got some. But if you know, keep pouring and keep adding water to their glass, eventually it overflows on all those around them. Same thing with respect. If people don't have respect, if you give them a little respect, now like that glass that used to be empty, there's some in there. And you keep giving them respect, eventually you'll find that they begin to hand it out to those around them. And it's all because of you and I. You and I, if this goes well, it's all on our hands. If it goes poor, the blood's all on our hands. The example that we set, the tone that we start with, that we make in these courtroom sessions, is primarily what we set, you know, and so your presentation value is extremely important. When you come in to the court, and some of you that are on this call have already been in court, and you're familiar with the protocol, and either the clerk or the bailiff will say, are the following parties present, and, you know, and the judge, you know, then he'll do roll call, and then the judge will get on the bench, and he'll say, Weissman versus State. Are you, Mrs. Weissman, you ready? And she'll go, yes, Your Honor. State, Mr. Deputy Attorney General, are you ready? Yes. Okay, Mrs. Weissman, you've made a motion. Can you, I'm having a hard time understanding what you're looking for right here. Can you please explain your motion to me? And they'll ask, okay, be prepared to explain your motion. Chat with somebody, anybody. Like Michael was saying about role-playing, we do that with students all the time. The students that are getting ready to prep to, over half of them, we spend time role-playing to help get them prepared. The last week, we've spent quite a bit of time with one particular student. He made an excellent showing today. Didn't get exactly what he wanted. There was a mistake. He went and had defendant served, and the judge says, your opponent isn't here today. I see nobody in opposition. Did you serve your opponent? Well, I went to the clerk's office, and we went to the bail's office and did this and got this approval. And she says, did you have your opponent served? And he says, well, I went and filed this paperwork and paid these fees. She says, you didn't. That was a serious mistake. When you have a yes or no question, answer yes or no. Don't go into descriptives. When words are many, disqualifiers are not far behind. The more words you use, the more chances of you getting disqualified or them ruling against you. If you can say yes or no, this student didn't say yes, which he had him served, had it paid for, everything was so perfectly in order, he could have got exactly what he was looking for right off the bat. And to me, it punctuated, you know, this event today punctuated another point that I realized that I needed to make tonight on the curriculum that we're presenting this evening. And that's that when you can answer yes or no, answer yes or no. Do not give descriptives. Do not explain why something is or isn't here. Do not go into the background that led up to a decision or an event. If they say, was the car blue? Well, Your Honor, I was standing in the parking lot across the street and the sun was in my... Hold on. Holy broken tree feathers, Batman. Shut up. Was the car blue? Yes. Well, you know, the sun was shining on it, and I couldn't tell whether it was a dark blue or light blue, you know. Holy kitty litter, Batman. Shut your mouth. Do not explain things. Do not use descriptives. If they ask for an explanation, never when you're answering a question, if you can give a yes or a no or a one-word answer, always, always, always give the one-word answer. Never, excuse me, I'm gonna grab a sip of my tea here for a second. Thank you for your patience. Never, ever, ever explain things or give descriptives when a one-word answer will do. A lot of us like to talk when we're nervous, and, you know, none of us are immune from that. It's like when you're negotiating and somebody, you know, you want to buy three apples here, and, you know, they're saying, well, I want a dime for each apple, and you say, well, I can give you a nickel per apple, and then they go to, rather than negotiating on the merits about how nice the apples are, and then they go to positional negotiation. Well, I'll go 9 cents, you know, and then you say some people will come back, and they'll come back positional and say, well, I'll give you 6 or 7. You know, instead of saying, you know, you negotiate on the merits, you say, well, if you can show me that those apples are really worth 9 cents, I'll see if I can try to give that to you. You know, but that's negotiating on the merits rather than positional, like, you know, I'll go 8 cents, you know, and you go 7. Then sometimes negotiating is that I have 6, I have 18 cents. I can offer you 6 cents an apple. If you can work with an offer of 6 cents per apple, I have that I can work with. That's what I'd love to do business with you. And they say, Well, I need seven. No and silence is also a negotiating position. You can say, you can just sit there and, and you just not even say a thing and shake your head, no, and just, and being prepared to walk away from a negotiation by saying no is also a very strong negotiating point. In court, when they ask a question, giving a one-word answer is extremely important. When they say, well, why did you do that, Your Honor? That's what I did. Because all I had was 18 cents. And they say, well, why didn't you have more, Your Honor? All I had was 18 cents. Don't, just because they're asking for more information, don't go into it. This is a negotiation. It's very much a negotiation. Be prepared to stand pat on on the facts that you gave. When words are many, potential disqualifiers are not far behind. The more words you give them, you have the right to remain silent. And anything you say can be used against you in a court of law. Anything you say can be manipulated or twisted to possibly go against you. Be careful about opening your mouth. If you're giving reasons why something is this or why something is that, as much as possible, just explain the facts. Your Honor, that's what was available at the time. Or, Your Honor, that was all we had, and don't go into, the fact that maybe you're laid off and you could have paid 24 cents, but don't go into any of that. In the court, the less words as possible to successfully communicate is better. That's always, always, always better. When you're preparing to get into court, you're going to need to have a cause for which the judge can grant you relief. If you go into court and you complain about this or complain about that, but do not give the justice the tools with which to help you, they can't help you. And the thing that's vitally important about that is that if you say, well, this person did this and this person did that and I got all these facts, okay, what is it you want me to give you? What relief are you seeking? There's a federal rule of civil procedure that requires that when you're in your pleading, that you provide a cause or an action for which with relief can be granted. And it's extremely important that you tell the judge, opening statement, you open an argument, give them an overview, tell the judge what you're going to tell them and everybody else in the procedure, in your entry there and your opening, and then tell them what you're going to tell them, and in your prayer, tell them what you told them. It's very, very important that you explain everything so that they understand it without any question. It's Rule 12b-6 in the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure. And it's when you, it's failure to state a claim for which relief can be granted. And there are many, many cases that get dismissed for that. And what happens is that you, when you go into court, whether you've, whether I've had the honor and the privilege of working beside you and assisting you in your pleadings, whatever you, if you remember nothing else, remember, state a claim for which the court can grant you relief. You open your pleadings with that. You you explain everything in the pleadings, and then in your prayer, you ask for that relief, okay? And so what's happening is that many, many cases, and there are people on this call right now, that some of them have had cases dismissed, quote-unquote, for failure to state a claim for which relief can be granted. And while they pointed out incredible amounts of facts and et cetera and did some amazing, wonderful work with their pleading, they didn't make it easy for the judge right off the bat to figure out what was needed, what did, what was expected of the court, and then give them the tools to litigate that, and then close by re-asking for that very same thing. Now, if you've got a lot of evidence, okay, that's good. However, putting it all in the same pleading isn't going to work, or in your complaint, that isn't going to work very well. Having exhibits with your evidence in it is the way to do that. Having a there's something called a memorandum that you can write in support of your complaint, and you can write the memorandum so that all your exhibits are attached to that, so that the 40,000 foot view on your complaint is, Judge, my neighbor's dog keeps getting out and it's bitten us three times, and we're suing for an injunction, a temporary injunction, permanent restraining order against our neighbor allowing their dog off its leash. Okay, then you go into the you know, into the body of the pleading. Look, our property has no fences. Fences are very expensive. There are fences in other places. They have brick walls. We've gotten estimates that cost, you know, that's going to cost $6,000, or it's going to cost $24. And we, the neighbor doesn't keep their dog on a leash, and it keeps coming over. And we've got a 3-year-old and a 5-year-old, and he goes into there, and that, and I've had multiple dog bites, and here's the one from the doctor where the 3-year-old had 5 stitches and the 7-year-old had 12 stitches, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And then you close in prayer. Wherefore, premises considered, Your Honor, we respectfully ask the court to make a temporary injunction and a permanent restraining order against the neighbors allowing their dog off a leash to protect my family and our property. You know, and what happens is that you tell the judge what you're asking for right up front. Then you tell the judge about what you're asking for, and then you pray or ask the judge for what you're asking for when you get done. This is the mindset that we want to start. Many of you are preparing to go down a couple of certain paths that it'll be our honor and privilege. Some of you are already on those paths. It'll be our honor and privilege to work with you through some of these situations and some of these trials, this litigation. it's with this mindset, if something happens, you know, and Brother John's not there, you already know, especially if something happens and, you know, 10 years from now, you end up in some type of litigation and you hire an attorney, you know, before that attorney, and I don't recommend hiring an attorney, I would recommend if there's any way at all that you go with an information provider, but that you make certain that you review all the pleadings that are being filed in your behalf so that you know what is or isn't going to fly, and you can say to the information provider, or if forbid that you should have an attorney, that you can say, hey, look, this is missing here, that's missing there. What do we what do we need to do to correct this? Now, when it comes to attorneys, etc., there was a Supreme Court ruling from 1985 where they ruled that all criminal defendants are entitled to representation. Do not let a court confuse representation with your Sixth Amendment assistance of counsel. And sometimes, you know, the judges bring that up, sometimes they don't. Today, the student brought up that he wanted his Sixth Amendment counsel there. We ended up getting more from this judge than we had hoped in our wildest dreams. We didn't banter that particular topic, and it was very good that we didn't. That's a topic that sometimes you have to leave for itself. And when you have a judge that says, I'm sorry, but this person is not a licensed or barred attorney, they can't, and it's, yes, Your Honor, under the following Supreme Court ruling under 1985, that normally would apply. However, this is my Sixth Amendment right, and which is the assistance of counsel, and there's no stipulation in the Constitution that requires a person to be a licensed or member of the bar. In fact, it was over 80 years from the time that the Sixth Amendment was penned and ratified that the American Bar Association was founded. And so it can't have anything to do with that. So what happens is that you have to be prepared to identify to the judge in a way that the judge understands so that they know you know the difference between representation, meaning that this person can answer, you know, anything on your behalf, and that you've given away your free will to them, and you've signed out your rights so that if they want to sell you down the road for a plea deal for some other case down the road, that they can do that. The assistance of counsel. In the saga of Mr. T, we went through 3.5 long months and many and 6 layers of pleading to finally get him to the place where he had the assistance of counsel. In this case, yeah, it was a public pretender, but we're still fighting that one. You, whatever you do, make certain that you don't give away your rights by accepting representation. With that, my time has come to a close. We're going to turn it over to question and answer. If you have questions about tonight's subject matter topic, it would be our honor and privilege to entertain those. This particular topic, like many others, is just the tip of the iceberg. This evening's discussion was just the tip of the iceberg on this, and we're going to continue further on this topic. We're finding out more and more that equipping our students and those of you who are on this call tonight to be able to fish is a very good thing. If I give a person a fish, I fed a person for a day. But if I teach a person to fish, I fed a person for life. And to that end, thank you very much. And I'll turn it back over to you, Martin, and you to you, Michael. Thank you.
All right, sir. Thank you so very much. Ladies and gentlemen, press star 2 on your keypad. Press star 2 to raise your hand. When I see it pop up, I will be happy to unmute your phone so you can speak directly with Brother John with your question or your comment. For you, those of you listening on Freedom's Radio, you will see a place center right of your screen, monitor screen, where there's a silhouette of a rectangle laying on its side. Left-click inside of it, type away your comment or question. Outside, underneath this silhouette of a rectangle, you'll find a place to put your name and some other information, then hit submit. When you do hit submit, it pops up on my end, and I'll be happy to lend my voice to your comment or your question. So let's start off with Bruce in the great state, Texas.
Hey, good evening. So a couple of quick questions. Last week, you had asked me to email you an IRS notice from 1985, where the director at the time of the IRS, this was April of 85, admitted that the 16th Amendment was never properly ratified and therefore the IRS really didn't exist. Did you see that, and is there anything we can do with that?
Bruce, can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay. Yes, thank you. I got that. And right now, we already kind of knew that the 16th Amendment hadn't been properly ratified. About 11 years ago, I had a investigator that was working for me that I actually had her going to the Library of Congress, and she was going to finish. She pulled out a whole bunch of the actual records that show that only two states actually ratified it, and that was pointed out in your little communication there. And I had, up until a fire about 9.5 years ago, I used to have the paper records, paper copies of those records from the voting and from from Congress, that we had the actual evidence. Thank you. I am going to work on re-getting and re-putting together all those records.
Okay. I honestly don't know who sent that to me, but it was in one of my Telegram feeds for all kinds of stuff, including RV information and political stuff going on. And then when we're done with this, I have a second question more relating to Trump and the ongoing cases in New York.
Okay, go ahead.
So I don't know if anybody here listens to Mark Levin in the afternoons. He was going down the road of the violations that the court has done on Trump in regards to violating his rights. And they're very closely going down that road of what we always say, violating your rights under color of law, without saying exactly that term. But Mark Levin has sent, there was some attorney that made a statement. He can probably go to I know Mark Levin's his show's on a podcast already, probably. And tonight's show had the verbiage from another very knowledgeable attorney that said, here's what they've done to him, and we can go down this road and arrest these judges and DAs. And it was the same road we're going down with, you know, the judges denying our rights under color of law and all that. So I didn't know if anybody had heard that, or somebody had mentioned to me weeks ago that our guys were in communication with that team. But Jim Jordan, the congressman, he's the head of the Judicial Committee right now, and he has the ability to subpoena records to see. One of the things that came up was that the judge and the DA were colluding between two different cases to try to railroad Trump, single him out, and specifically bastardize some rules to make it look like he did something bad when he runs a very clean business. So anyway, didn't know if anybody was aware of that or had heard that, but we can probably get a link to that podcast and send it out for people to listen to.
Yeah, so you're saying that you're concerned about the possibility of a president being charged with fraud without fraud ever actually occurring, and that no evidence of the fraud has occurred.
There was no damages. There was no injured party. The banks, they're claiming he overvalued his property. All the banks that were involved have testified and say, hey, this is the best real estate operator ever. We got
right.
That. We made money, et cetera, et cetera. You know, there's no damage here. There's no injured party. What are you doing? And the judge, you know, the judge and the DA made it her campaign promise to take down Trump, which may be her undoing in the appeal. But
right.
Anyway, I didn't know if anybody had heard that or if they heard that. I'm hearing that this afternoon screaming at the radio. We know how to deal with this.
Yeah. Good point, Bruce. Thank you for your input. Did you have anything else, Bruce?
Nope, that was it. Thank you very much,
Bruce,
for your consideration.
Thank you for your consideration, brother. And back to you, Michael.
I had to unmute. Thank you for your patience. Press star 2 in your keypad, ladies and gentlemen. For those of you in Freedoms Radio, post your comments. And otherwise, we're going to say good night. John, do you have any closing comments for us this evening?
To reiterate, though you're not at war, the tip of the spear best be sharp. We're many of you right now are preparing to embark on, or have already started embarking on, some situations that will require a court presence. And as much as possible, if we could start working together to, as much as I'm going to try to use the evening calls to prepare as much of the group as possible. But there's going to be a point with which probably most or all of you will want to go down the same path. And so to that end, if you can keep up with the calls, it would really be a good thing for you. And it is truly, truly an honor and a privilege to serve beside you in restoring liberty to America. Thank you.
Alrighty, and then one last thing, Brother John, is that both Jim and Nicholas, from both our Arizonians, are here. Did you have anything to direct to them?
Jim, We're going to be working on your next batch here shortly. And, Jim, I had hoped that portion of the call that tonight, because we're going to propel you back into court here shortly. And Nicholas is already we've got a heck of a lineup for Nicholas, and that way, and the one thing about Nicholas is that blesses my heart is that Nicholas is prepared to stand up and be counted as number 57 on that with that roll call vote of those on the Declaration of Independence. Thank you, both of you.
All righty. Consider joining us tomorrow night. I will be presenting Mr. Slevin's Limited Liability Company, and I also will be sharing with you the solution that has been given to us with regards to the concern regarding January 1st, 2024, demand that the managers of the limited liability company expose themselves. So join us tomorrow night for that. Until then, good night, everyone, and be well.
The conference is now completed. Goodbye. Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.